sky hit the ground. Now life is everywhere. Didn't even have to try. The seeds were welcomed here. Life spread like fire. Didn't tire Mother Earth's desire. And with a joyful cry, the sky wept down upon her. Next thing you know, silver fin got the surface of the sea. Sliding the air, prints on the ground from out of the sea. Trees, leaves, and seas bearing fruit in multiplicity. And let's join into the sound. Can you and me?
Hey, what's up? For those of you that have gotten to know me over the years, it doesn't come easy being the most attractive.
Christmas is not far away. Come catch Santa on his sleigh. Time is precious. Seize the day at Ski's Watch and Clock. Ski's been in business for 20 years. He knows his stuff, so have no fears. He knows about all those tiny gears inside every clock. When you come to Ski's Watch and Clock, his variety is huge. From wristwatches, pocket watches, stopwatches, desk clocks, mantle clocks, grandfather clocks, new and previously owned reconditioned pieces. Right now, with Christmas so close, we will only accept light repairs till after Christmas. The elves are busy enough as it is filling Santa's sleigh. Don't let the Grinch stop you from filling the stockings or putting things under the tree this year. If you're worried about getting someone a gift, you can put items on layaway with just a small deposit. Thanks to Ski, you can send that stupid Grinch to his bedroom with no dinner or TV and no computer or PlayStation. By now, you must be wondering where Ski's Watch and Clock is. It's located in beautiful downtown Winter Haven at 106 West Central Avenue, Florida, just across from the main post office. Call 863-294-5630. Again, that number is 863-294-5630.
Well, it's now November the 22nd, and last week here on the Entertainment Review radio show, we were talking, Wacko Bob and I were talking with Linda Albu from the Internet Publicist, and I am really thrilled to say, Bob, that this is our last Entertainment Review radio show here on the Wacko Radio Network. Would you like to fill in people about your upcoming Thanksgiving special before we begin the show, Bob?
And it's not the last one on the Wacko Radio Network. It's the last one here on Blog Talk Radio, you got to remember.
That's right. That's right. So let the people know about the Thanksgiving special coming up, Bob.
Yes, Thanksgiving special. It's our traditional show that we've done every year. It's going to be done as a simulcast on both Blog Talk Radio and Mixlr. And it's us saying goodbye to Blog Talk Radio, saying goodbye to almost 8 years' worth of time and adventures that we've had on BTR. So it's definitely something new and something that's going to have its emotions, but its excitement as well, too. So everyone check it out at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time as we go head-to-head with the Macy's Parade, as always.
Excellent. And, Bob, I've scheduled a very special guest. We're taking the show from publicity, and we're going to look at one of the acoustic guitar players, singer, songwriter. I would like to introduce my friend. Actually, I'll let him introduce himself to our audience. Go ahead, my guest, introduce yourself and tell people a little bit about yourself.
Hey, Willie. Hey, Bob. This is Joseph Strider, and thanks so darn much for having me on your show and everyone else who might be listening in. Tell you about myself. Let's see. Okay, this probably should be pertinent to music stuff and what I do. All right, let's see. You know, it's funny. I'm looking at things and I'm seeing this and all these shows, award shows I've been nominated as under singer-songwriter, and I realized that singer-songwriter was a term used back in the 70s, and it's still being used today, and personally I don't really care for it. So what I did was I made up my own genre, and I called myself Modern Indigenous Alternative. And I use those words because, I mean, yeah, it's today modern, and I'm Indigenous, and the alternative I use is on, if you've heard any of my albums, I have four. One of them is a complete instrumental, guitar instrumental, and then the three are, if you watch my fingers here, quote, singer-songwriter and instrumental, and it's a mixture of the fact that I'm a urban Native American. I've never lived on a reservation. I know of reservations, lots of issues. However, I wasn't raised that way, so I'm raised in contemporary society, viewing my eyes, knowing my Native American heritage, viewing through my eyes this world, and translating this stuff and a lot of it into music, and of course, my thoughts. I've been nominated Native American Music Awards twice, Indian Summer, and Aboriginal People's Choice Music Awards. I forget what they're called now. I think it's Indigenous People's Music or something like that. Probably change the words. Four CDs. I've been at this a few years. Most know me as Joseph Strider, and I don't know. Is there any particular questions you got? But that's again, thank you, everyone. I'm also what the Department of Corrections calls a chaplain, and I am the Native American spiritual leader at a state penitentiary, and besides that, those are the things that make up my sometimes interesting life. Yeah, there you
go.
Okay.
That's wonderful, Joseph. That is basically a brief characterization of yourself. And basically, I would like Bob, Wacko Bob, who's filling in as my co-host due to John Brandeberry is rather ill and has an issue medically. So Wacko Bob's been filling in here on the program. Wacko Bob, I'll let you start with the questions for Joseph Strider today.
And let's start by talking about the fact that you do a lot of acoustic music.
Yes, sir.
You do a lot of acoustic music. And what drove you more to doing things more in a acoustic setting?
Well, years ago, I used to play with bands, and mostly I was the lead singer, and I played some electric guitar, and honestly, I just got tired of the electric stuff, and I wanted to, I'm totally self-taught on guitar. As a matter of fact, I couldn't explain to you what I'm playing, I've just been looking for sounds, looking for alternate tuning. And one of the things that really, really drew me to acoustic guitar was I like the natural string sound, and I stay away from distortion. And what thrills me personally when I'm doing it is the exactness that needs to be placed on the strings so that it's crisp and it's clear in all the individual notes, which suits my, let me see, what's a good word for it? My, it's really hell being such an imperfect perfectionist, if you get what I'm saying. So being able to go in this world in my guitar, which I look at it like, since there's got to be something, and I don't understand it, the nearest that I could put it out is that I've got this thing, I'm like a conduit, so to speak, or one of the many, many, many conduits, and something's coming from wherever it's coming from, the energy around, coming through my brain, coming through my body, coming through my hands, and then placed into the guitar, and then here comes the sound. And these things, true or not, and I remember asking someone, oh, I thought I did this or I thought I imagined this, and the guy said, well, real or not, what does it matter? It's happening, you know? So it's a mixture of things. It's a convoluted, that's an interesting question, and obviously my answer is very convoluted. But it's pure. For me, it's spiritual, and it's precision. And those three qualities is something that I just really strive for. And a natural and good and no BS, no lies. I'm not, when I'm playing my guitar, I can't hide anything. You know what I mean? It's not doable, because when I screw up, it is, to me, it's as big as 20 billboards, you know, and being able to hone and to center that perfection, the perfectionist in me on guitar has been like a spiritual release for me, you know what I mean? And I to make a short answer long, there you go.
Well, I would like to ask you about, you know, you mentioned the word spiritual in what it is and what you are grasped by your instrument. And I would like to compare this to what I would think of being, you know, a crossroad in guitar playing, like as in the movie Crossroads, where they featured the that great blues player and Steve Vai is playing the other guy in that. And do you find that you reach certain levels of crossroads in your playing where you just can't get it, and then all of a sudden you finally reach that spiritual point where you grow as an artist, Joseph?
And I guess the best way that I could explain that is that sometimes I'll be working on something, and I guess I should explain how I go about the process. What I do is I make up little bits of what I call pieces of music, and I'll make these. I'll make 3, 4, maybe 5 of them, and then the real trick comes in is blending them together. You know, making them a smooth transition one to another. And often what will happen is I'll start working on these pieces and it just gets frustrated and I start going off into something else. And then I'm like, whoa, no, I'm losing that. So I go back and do it again. And then I start losing it again. And so what I need to do at that point is to put my guitar down and walk away from it. And then give myself a little bit of time. It could be a few minutes, it could be a week, and then go back to the guitar where I was again, and then it's like I rebooted, you know. And so when I do that, normally what happens is that second, maybe third time, but mostly on the second times, on the time it happens again, you know. And It's hard to put a name on it, but I guess that's a good word for it, you know, spirituality and the connectedness with it. But it either flows or it doesn't flow. You know what I mean? And
exactly.
So I rely on that, and I just rely on the feeling. Yeah, and I know that sounds kind of hippie, but obviously, you're not going to hear a song from an artist if they don't really care for it, you know. So it's if it doesn't move me, so what's being moved is my inner being, which would probably be my spirit, right?
Interesting way of putting that. Wacko Bob, you got a question for Joseph now?
Yeah, let's dive into this a little more. You talk about what else you do and everything. You know, as a chaplain,
mm-hmm.
as a chaplain, and you primarily do that. You said on a reservation.
Oh no, I do that in a state penitentiary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I work in a prison. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow, there you go.
Yeah, yeah, it's a little different. You know, there are similarities considering the fact that what is a reservation but a prison? But, you know, in a state-run penitentiary, and you know, there's lots and lots of crazy rules, you know, and the glass ceiling is very, very low, you know. But not in a reservation, though. I work with people. I've met several who are almost full blood, but the majority of them are not, half or less, or you know that old one. You know my great grandmother was a Cherokee. You know, I hear that often. You know?
Oh, well, I hear you where that goes.
Well, I would like to go into this a little bit more, and we will leave the conversation of songwriting, and we'll get back to it because Bob has opened the can of worms. So I think that I'll open it even more. You know, people tend to have a misconception of Joseph's people. People call them Indians. Why should they not be called Indians, Joseph? Why do you dislike calling yourself an Indian?
Well, from my understanding, the story that I heard, and I could be wrong because I've heard so many, but and I don't like to say that guy's name, so I'll just call him Mr. C. That guy was lost back around the late 1400s. And the story that I understood, and he was somewhere down in the Caribbean and he was looking for India. And he of course, didn't find India. As a matter of fact, he's a lost. And fortunately for him, he found some land. And then there were these indigenous people who lived, lots and lots of these people who lived on this land who Mr. C discovered, you know. And he came up on shore, and I'm going to be nice about this and the things that he did, and he called them, I forget the exact phrase, but it had something to do with Los Indios, and at that particular, what he meant by that were those, which I kind of like, is those who were closest to God. And what he meant by that was that the way they lived in with the land. They lived caring and loving the land and taking care of the land and each other. And look, I'm not going to say that all indigenous people are all giving, and there's much, much warfare and strife. But people always say, well, the Indians would have done it too. And I said, well, wait a minute. You're saying they would have gone, they would have built ships and gone to other countries to take over the country? Yeah, they would have done that. And I'm like, well, how can you say that? You're saying something that's, you're saying woulda, coulda. And the fact of the matter is that it didn't. And what you're doing now is you're telling me that the native people, all the things they've learned about the land and how to care for each other, and I'll use Lakota terms and their connection with Wakantanka or Wakankin, and knowing that they had everything that they needed on this land, why would they want to go over to yours? They didn't want your land, and so as far as I'm concerned, you're putting on a European twist on it, you know. And again, no offense to European, but I understand that before then that you guys really trashed your land and you really did need something to take. And so you know, what choice really did you have but to sail to somewhere else and take that and become and use that parasitic virus mentality over here. You know, and so it's all these things that, and then it all comes back to your question again, calling Indian, we're not. And a lot of people will say, well, yes, we are. Well, you were named that.
You know, it's like, I'm Apache, all right? Well, I'll put it to you this way, okay? So, say I'm wandering around the what we call this northern, the United States, Canada, or Mexico, whatever, and some ship comes up. I'm Apache, remember? So they go, well, what's the name of this land? And the only thing I could think of is I'm looking around, I'd say, well, Apache, right? Because I don't own this, and it's not mine. So you're talking to somebody, and you're asking me where we are. Well,
Bob, there we go.
And it's really interesting. I could go way into this. I mean, okay, but the bottom line is that nothing that we think we have, we're taking with us on our next part of the journey. I always, you know, like when I talk to the guys at the prison, I said, you're looking at, you know what you're looking at right now? You're looking at a meat bag, okay? This is a meat bag that holds who I am. And before long, it's not going to exist anymore. But who I am, I believe, will become part of, you know, you will go to Einstein's, you know, energy, matter. So now I'm matter, and then I'll be energy. Will I be matter again? I don't know. You know,
well,
but you know, I know that that's a long explanation about that. But it all stems back to the Indian thing, you know, and how we're named that, and which I don't like because I don't want anything to do with that guy, nothing. And when I teach and what I teach, everything I'm learning is pre-Columbus stuff, you know. And that's what I'm concerned with, is being an indigenous person to this country.
Well, Joseph, I can definitely understand, you know, what you were saying. It seemed as though the white man or mankind in general is a little bit invasive upon other people's lands and all of that kind of thing. And, you know, the Europeans came over and wiped out the buffalo, you know. Like how your Aboriginal people, or if you prefer, indigenous people of North America, you killed for food and not for sport. And nowadays there's such a big, big issue of conservation between a lot of people. But, you know, mankind has sort of brought this right out of Africa, you know. And we've got so very, very little natural wildlife and reserves and habitats left in our world. So, you know, did we do wrong? Did mankind do wrong in general coming out of Africa? Who knows? It's the way of our history, Joseph. So, you know, what do you think of, you know, your ways? Do you study the native Aboriginal ways, like you mentioned before Columbus? Can you give our audience a little bit of idea on that?
I explained that, but I guess I'll go a little further in taking what you need, and which isn't much, you know, we really don't need much. And then you leave it away, you leave it and you walk away and you move around. I think we'd been better off as nomads, you know, wandering. Of course, this is just my feelings on it. I mean, I could be totally full of crap, you know, and I'm sure some people would feel that way for me. But it's like, there's four words that we learn as infants. The first four words that we use. There's mommy, and there's daddy, and there's no, which is a good thing. We need our boundaries. And then the other word is mine. And there's nothing that's mine, you know. And there's nothing that's yours. We're just here temporarily. And the things that I've learned is that we're born, we're adolescents, we're adults, and then we're elders, and then we go back into the birth again. And now we're talking about the circle, and which has been moreover more contemporarily placed as the circle of life, and that's all there was, and that's all there is, and that's all there will ever be, is this circle of life. And then you could cut that up like a pie, right? So, and then even go further in that and place directions. What is the morning? What does that mean? What, you know, there's so many words that you could translate into when the sun comes up. Another chance, a new day, you know, and so on and so forth. And of course, this is all based upon the Lakota ways that I've been, you know, learning and teaching. And then going into, of course, that would be the East, and then going into the South, which is the time of the adolescence. And all that deals with adolescence. And there's so many other words to use and meanings. And then, of course, going to the West, the time of darkness and the time of adolescence, or I'm sorry, adult. You need to be strength. And that's the time where adults, what is our position as adults? That we're right in the middle then. Now we need to take care of those in the South and the East and the North. And everything that goes with that. And then into the North, the big light. And so here's our time of elders. And by that time, we should know everything. We should. Well, not everything, but what's important, you know, because of what we've been through as adults, as adolescents, and as children. And knowing that we're going to go back into that phase as a child, we, you know, go back to needing others to take care of us and things like that. And this is a way of life. And this, I mean, it's really simple. It's really simple. We human beings have made it extremely complicated. And in all those things, there's ceremonies. And like I teach the guys, everything is a ceremony. Everything should be a ceremony. And, you know, I see people sitting down to eat and they pray to their food. And I'll ask the guys, and raise your hand who prays over their food. And they'll say, well, you know, the hands will come up. And I say, well, how many pray when you have a drink of water? And they just look at me really odd. And I said, so would it be wrong for you to thank what we refer to as mother's blood? After all, let's look at the earth. The earth is approximately 70% water, and then the rest of it is matter, solid. So scientists have come to prove that we're pretty much the same as a human body. We're about 70% of water, and then the rest of us is solid material. Do you think it would be odd to think that that's a really, really major connection with Mother Earth? That we have the same components? We're made from the same stuff. We're made from the same stuff as a rock is. And those we call grandfathers, of course, you guys know that, and they hold the most ancient of wisdom. And then we could start getting younger. We look at trees and, you know, and so on and so forth and coming towards us. And it's all this basic, for me, it just seems really basic and logical that's what it is. And then one of the other things is I use the grandfather teachings, and I really harp on the grandfather's teachings. And have I not done many of those things? Absolutely. I have not been humble. I have not been honest. I have not been truthful. You know, and all these things. And you know, to not do them and to suffer the consequences for them are good lessons for you to learn them, you know, which plays a really good role when you're working with felons. And mind you, there are some felons who need to be away from society. They're true psychopaths, whether they have some sort of brain injury, whether it was self-induced or whether it was given to them upon birth or what have you. But there are some people who really need to be kept away from society. But the large majority of them that are being incarcerated, it's wrong. They're not bad people. They're say they're not the brightest of people, but that doesn't, a stupid person's not a bad person, and they get caught doing some stupid petty thing over and over again, and because it's making them money, and what do you need here on this earth to live? It's money. So it comes down to that. And yes, there are just some mean-hearted people. And I used to think that everyone was inherently kind, but after my going on 6 years working in a penitentiary, well, even people out on the street, I don't really feel that way anymore. But that doesn't mean they're evil, but doesn't mean they're kind either. And for me, this is what it's about, is teaching somebody to open up their heart and take that longest journey they'll ever take in their life is from the top of their head to their heart, you know, to open up and at least start loving themselves. And I don't mean that in a way for believing that you're bigger than you are. I use lots of different ways to explain that, and using this seesaw and keeping things in balance and all sorts of things. And considering the fact that most of them were raised with Christian dogmas and philosophies, I'll be able to sometimes use the Christian reference to it, and the Native American reference would mean the same thing, but are different because one is a Christian and one is Native American or indigenous. You know, all those words are, you know, they just kind of roll all together. And I probably got away from your answer there, but it's just so convoluted and so, you know, to be able to fit it all. And I've been working with some of these guys for close to 6 years now, and you know, we just have to repeat lessons over and over again, which is really good for me too, because then, you know, it reinstills it in myself.
Wacko Bob, take a couple of questions with Joseph here up until our break.
So how do you feel if I say this? You know, we're definitely going to get back to the music here. How do you feel when you get someone out there, especially now with what's going on in our country today, especially now with Barack Obama, who was elected president, being looked at as the first black president, and really mulatto, and you hear someone say the words I said, that doesn't impress me at all. You want to impress me? Elect a Native American Indian president. How do you feel when you hear something like that?
Well, I don't, you know, Bob, I don't have enough, I haven't looked into that enough, and I'm not saying, and this goes for any nationality, okay, anyone. But since you put it on a Native American thing, I don't know. My feelings about whoever's going to be president needs to be somebody who doesn't want to be president. Okay? First off, I believe that power promotes corruption, and to suspect all who seek it. It's been proven time and time and time again. Bob, people are people. I don't care which nationality you are. If you have an inherent feelings of greed and your ego is just so huge and you believe that you're just the shit, you know, I don't care for people like that at all. Don't like them. And having somebody who feels that way, and that Trump guy, that guy, wow, he scares me, actually. He's got such a huge, enormous, narcissistic ego. And I don't think, you know, I think that egos of narcissistic egos everywhere would be upset with him if he got elected. Simply because they're going to say, well, you know, I could have done that, or I should do that, or I could do better, you know, and that's the way narcissists think. But having a Native American, you know what? That would be great. Again, as long as this person doesn't really want to be president, but just doing the job because they're doing it for the people, not for themselves. And if we could go back to the grandfather teachings, and if somebody could run this country, obviously not one person does, but if people could run this country in those ways of, this is not for me, this is for everyone, this is for the world, this is for the people, that would be great. And whether it was a woman, a man, Italian, an African, whatever, you know, it doesn't really matter. Just as long as they're doing it for the people, not for their pocketbooks, not so they could play into the corrupt game. But, you know, humankind has gotten way, and this, again, this is all in my opinion, is that we've just gotten way, it's all out of control. It's out of control. And it doesn't matter who's going to come in next. They're just stepping into a big, huge, huge tract of shit. You know,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter who. And it's like I see all this stuff on Facebook, people bashing them and this and that. And I always say, don't worry. Next year you're going to have another president to hate. Okay? So you're good. You know? So, but, you know, I don't know the exact statistics, but, you know, from what I've seen, the guy's done a lot of good. I don't really care for the health plan except for it's getting people to have health care that didn't. However, premiums are outrageous and office visits are crazy. You know, I remember back in the time when you worked with somebody and you automatically got insurance and your copay was like $5, and you know, so it's just out of control, you know. So, you know, I don't know. It's we're in a bad way, and you know what? Here's the deal, and it's unfortunate. What happens when we have destruction? Out of destruction and out of chaos comes a new beginning, right?
Yeah.
That's normally what the way it's been. And I always look at it this way, you know, I'm sorry about all these things, and I really am, but I know I only have so much time left on this planet. And for whoever this is left for, the children, I, from the bottom of my heart, the whole of my heart, I apologize. I'm sorry that we're going to leave this world in such a shitty shape for you. And I hope that you can do something, come together in a good way to help one another so that you guys could manage to hold on to life for a little bit longer in a good way, and not just in a way where it's become for so many as just plain survival. And that's not life. You know? Why should somebody have to work? It's funny, I see these politicians say things like, oh, if you work hard and you know, you could be a millionaire like me, you know? And I'm like, okay, then let's take African women in third country villages. They work 24 hours a day really hard. Why aren't they millionaires? You know? And it's just all this flapping of their gums, and you know, and what I like to call, you know, kissing hands and shaking babies, and you know, and it's all rhetoric and it's just all BS. And again, I don't have much more time in this world, and that's fine by me. And I'm sorry for the wreck that this world has been left in for our children. I really am. And if we would have kept considering, like, you know, that we're responsible for the next seven generations, not just our own offspring, but the generations, all of them, maybe it wouldn't be this way. But then again, I don't know that either. You know, I just really don't know. So there's another short answer, long.
Yeah, I hear you where that goes to. And definitely does really get you to think about things there. Jumping back into the music here, how would you describe your your style of music. What are your influences as far as musically and artist wise as well too?
Okay, so from way back when I was a kid, Jimmy Page, love Jimmy Page, Jimi Hendrix, Stevie Ray Vaughan. I love their playing, and there's other ones, and then more contemporary. Well, maybe not Bruce Coburn. I love the way that he writes. I mean, even the Beatles, Tom Emanuel. I can't think of other acoustic guitarist names right offhand. But then even these fascinating bass players like from Primus, Les Claypool.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I was a metalhead for a long time, and that really influenced me. And I don't think I sent you, you know, anything that any just like some frenetic guitar pieces that I have, but I have some of those. And Mozart, I remember them saying there were too many notes, and I was like, oh, I want to do that. So all these things influenced me, all different types. I'm a kid hanging out with my metalhead friends, and I'm listening to stuff like Carmina Burana, you know, and they're just like, what is that crap, you know? And I said, well, this is classical music, and they hated it. And then late, you know, it was interesting. The later I came to find out that these really great, like Kirk Hammett from Metallica, that guy plays awesome classical guitar, you know. And then there's friends of mine like Gabriel Ayala, man, he is hot, great guitarist, you know. And I think he calls himself Jazz Mingo. You know, I've got so many influences. And then songwriting. Jeez, man, if it wasn't for my English teachers when I was growing up allowing me to write songs, to write prose, and to write poetry, I would have stopped. And like lyrics from, like, I listened to the interesting lyrics from Neil Peart from Rush, and his interesting lyrics, they were interesting. They got me thinking, you know, and the way that words were phrased, and I remember I was in college. I'm sitting at the academic learning center because I suck at anything math. I mean, I could add and subtract and stuff like that, but fortunately I never needed algebra out here. But I used to, when I was going over to work with them to learn more about algebra and all those mathematical things, I was also I taught people how to write, and people would come up to me. They go, here, how's this? So I'm reading, and you know, all the lines of it, kit, can't, wamp, whatever words that rhymed. And I'm like, why do you always have to write words that rhyme? And they go, well, that's the way it is. I said, but it doesn't flow. It's so abrupt. It's so expectant. I'm gonna expect for you to try to rhyme a dog with frog, and you know, and it's, for me, it's about flowing. How does it flow? You know, am I the most gifted writer? Hell no, not at all. You know, I'm not the greatest at anything I do. You know, but it's just a part of who I am and things, the way that I express myself. And writing, I like writing. I especially like working on guitar pieces, and for me, the more intricate, the better. And I love it. I remember I'm giving this person my guitar, my string theory CD, and they had listened to it. They're like, how many cuts did you have to do on there? And I was like, excuse me? And they go, you know, how many times did you have to put like layers on there? And I was like, once. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I said, no, that's just one. I said, it wasn't one take because I had to redo the song on that particular one. But it's just me all by myself doing it once. And he was like, holy crap. It sounds like two or three guitars in there. And so I picked up my guitar and then I showed him what I was doing. And he goes, don't use a pick. And I'm like, well, I got five. Why should I get a little plastic thing in my hand. And I said, but if I were playing rock, if I were doing power chords, yeah, I'd use it. You know, that it's a lot easier to get your power chords out with a pick. But again, going back to earlier, what I would do with guitar, I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm using, I can't use, I don't use all of my fingers, but I use enough of them, you know. And I think I've kind of gone away from the original question here.
No problem there either. I mean, you know, I was about to say that, you know, you talked about not using a guitar pick and how you got five of them, you know what I mean? So Steve Howell from Yes is the same way, too.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love it. Oh, when I remember, how old was I? First time, I think it was 13 or 14, and I got to see Yes. And they were late, and they were about 40 minutes late. And Steve Howe walks out on the stage. They were actually waiting on Steve Howe, and he came and he apologized. And he had these, he had three acoustic guitars, and they were set up on, you know, those spring things, so he didn't have to strap them. And he played an acoustic instrumental thing for like 30 minutes, and I was floored. I was like, oh, my God, I got to play like that, you know? And, it, you know, influences Steve Howe, you know? It's, there's just so many people, and I wish I could think of other names. The guitarist for Jethro Tull, Brian Setzer, you know, all these really fascinating guitarists who just got their instrument and took it to different levels, you know. But I mean, even still, I tell people, have you ever heard Roy Clark play? Did you ever hear Roy Clark jam? That guy's awesome. So you know, it's all these people that a lot of people wouldn't even think. Well, he just plays country or bluegrass or what have you. But okay, I don't know all the musicians in the world, but I've heard a lot of them. And these guitarists, these acoustic guitarists, and the precision just fascinated me. And I guess that's what kind of, you know, I've heard people say, well, you're blessed with what you do. And I say that fact of the matter is I was blessed with the desire because I worked really hard to be able to produce a sound that I don't even know what I'm playing, you know.
Well, Bob, I think that we should take a little break here and go into one of Joseph's songs. So what are we going to play for the audience, Bob? Bob, are you there?
I am here. I am looking at what you do have. I know I have three songs by him. One of them was shortened for some reason. I don't know if it came to me that way, downloaded, or it was just
oops,
another BTR glitch. But let's do that, and we'll take our commercial break. Let's play. Let's see here. What would be a good one to play here out of the three I do have? As I get Strider back up here. And some comments in the chat room are looking good. Good here at the same time. Edwina Bay says, love Roy Clark.
Hey, Edwina.
I do want to say that one. Let's do Indigenous Indian.
That's Indigenous Indignation Blood. Remembers. That's a kind of... what I know about the Trail of Tears and all the things that have been done to Native Americans, this is kind of a harsh song, actually. But, yeah.
Well, it's a 7.5-minute song, too. Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of harsh. And while I started writing it, I was coming back from Canada. I was with some people. We were doing getting ready for a Sundance. And we came across, we were coming back, and they stopped us, and they stripped the car in the process, and, you know, we had pipes and stuff like that, and it was maddening. And then I'm sitting there, and there's this huge billboard size picture of George Bush, and I was furious. The people I was with were sitting on me, and trying to keep me from my mouth from going off. And the things that were happening to us and the way that we were being treated. And I was just furious. And coming into this country where my ancestors are from and knowing that it's not my home. It's not my home anymore. There's no place on this land that is my home. And it just, and all of these things, and that's what came out of it, this song here.
All right.
tomorrow. This is borrowed up, the home of our children, the stolen land.
It's your friend, the audiophile, here on the Wacko Network. While you're familiar with my various programs on the network, like the Audiophile's Archive and my appearances on other shows, you may not know I am the owner of Vinyl Rock Source Mail Order. VRSMO has a great selection of hard-to-find and out-of-print LPs, CDs, music DVDs, music Blu-rays, audio accessories, and so much more. We stock great reissues and box sets by some of the world's best artists. If you're a Pink Floyd fan, you can't go wrong with the group's brand new and final studio album, The Endless River, available on CD, deluxe CD DVD, deluxe CD Blu-ray, or 2LP vinyl. This is by far the bestseller in VRSMO's history, and it's only been out for a few weeks. So I recommend you stop by www.vinylrocksource.com and check out all the deals for you or that music fan in your life. You'll be glad you did. That web address again is www.vinylrocksource.com. Don't forget www.vinylrocksource.com.
And go and check out VinylRockSource.com for your Christmas wishes. Bob, I'm getting a little bit of noise here off of your Skype here. So
I went off my Skype.
Okay. So we're back here on the Entertainment Review Radio Show with my friend Joseph Strider. And Joseph, I'm going to take it back because Bob started the show off with music, but we sort of went into the other topic. So we're back on the music topic. And you mentioned something about Indigenous Awards. Can you explain the Indigenous Awards for the United States? Because they're a little bit different up here in Canada. So could you explain what that is all about? Because we don't really see these kind of things on TV like Grammy Awards and all of those other types
right.
of awards.
Jeez. As far as Native American music is concerned, it's not a... I mean, it's celebrated by Native Americans and also those who are... you know, the native part, as we like to call. But, I mean, as far as broadcast is concerned, there was one time, and I can't think right offhand, there have been some Native Americans who have won Grammy Awards. However, the Native American section of that has been taken away. They don't do it for the Grammys and things like that anymore. And I remember one of the things when I was over there, they had a television station, ATP or ANTP, and they were actually broadcasting the Indigenous Music Awards ceremony from that. And I was like, wow. And even the Native American Music Awards, the Native twin of the Grammys, isn't broadcast to the United States. They don't do it. You know, which... is still part of the separation. And you know, in the way I if these people or even the government acknowledge Native Americans, then they're going to have to do something. And if you keep saying, well, they don't even exist, then you don't have to be here. So, and it's interesting, I see, and no offense to them, I think it's great, because if you want to be a movie actor or a musician or whatever race you are, great. But in the United States, all the other ones are prized, but not Native Americans. They won't do it. And it's really interesting. You know, and I think it could go back to what I was just talking about. And, you know, as long as you don't acknowledge them, then you don't have to deal with them, and you can say they don't even exist. And which is funny. And sometimes I get so angry, and I'm like, well, isn't this a shame? You just didn't kill all of them. You know, too bad for those bleeding hearts that saved the ones that were there. And here's the miracle. There's still Native American people here. And of course, the major difference is, and what I've seen, the majority of artists in Canada for this particular award ceremony are Canadian, you know, in one way, shape, or another. And then over here, you have most of them, they're just of this particular piece of land. So, you know, and the votes are hard to come by, and regardless of who it is, if it's the Grammys or it's the Mammies, it's a popularity contest, and you know, and so that's just the way it's run, and that's the way humans are. But the fact of the matter is, Willie, they're both awesome.
Excellent.
It's fun, and. You know, and I think one of the terms is, you know, you're rubbing elbows with all these people and all these musicians that you've heard and you've heard music, you finally get to meet them, you talk to them, they're cool, and they're great to hang out with, and they're fun people, I've had the privilege of being able over here on this part of the world and the United States and meeting a lot of people. I'm not even going to throw in names, there's too many of them. And then being able to go. But one of the biggest thrills for me was I actually got to perform at a show, but it was in Canada, you know, which was, it was a thrill for me. I haven't been able to do that at one of these shows, and don't know if I ever will, but that was like, it was a high point in you know, my musicianship, was being able to perform in this auditorium for people who were there just for that particular occasion, and that was thrilling, and I loved it, and I just love performing. But I'm the kind, you know, whether I have one person or in the room or 10,000 in a room, I'm gonna play my heart out, as I always do, and it was just really, it's a little hard to put into words for, you know, when you lose, you know, you're going to lose. I never expect to win. That's something I don't put off my mind. So I don't think, well, I'm not going to win anyway. Cause I'm looking at these other artists and they just got something that I don't, or, you know, and that's okay. And that's just the way it is. But, it's a great, great experience either way. You know, and with all the people that I've had the opportunity to deal with and to sit and have coffee with, and, you know, and things like that, and you know, meet all these people from beginners to veterans in music, and it's I don't even have the right words. It's just a great, great experience, and I recommend, if you are a musician, first thing, don't try to feel like you're going to be a rock star, okay? Forget it, right? Don't go into it in that manner. Go to it what the music does for you. And give the music, and if they want to hear it, they're going to hear it, and if they don't want to hear it, they're not going to hear it, you know? And just go in with that, and don't allow yourself to fall apart if it doesn't work out the way you would hope to, because it's probably not going to, you know? I came into doing this particular stretch of what I do now with you know, big hopes, and of course, none of them panned out, you know, so it was a good lesson for me to, you know, to understand that, because I live it, you know, and the ones who do appreciate my music, I'm so extremely forever grateful for that. I appreciate their support. And the other ones who haven't listened to my music, I wish you would, but this might be something they liked. But doing it for myself is what I have to do, you know, and I did it, and here's another CD, and there you go. And by the way, if you want one, you could go to my site, josephstrider.com, or you could go to CD Baby, get downloads, and I think Carbon 14 is the only physical copy you can buy from CD Baby. However, if you want something from me, you could go find me at, you could go to my site, and there's the merch page, and you know, and stuff like that, and it's we run it through PayPal, and I'll be happy to mail, autograph, what have you, and I would be honored, and I'd greatly appreciate it. I could use some money, actually.
But
again, I know I went off to get your question, but it's great. It's great, Willie. Have you ever done any of these shows yourself?
Well, I would like to mention what Joseph said was about Canada, okay? Coming
mm-hmm.
up here on the Reefs and Rivers Aquarium show, we will be talking to a Canadian, Nelson Fletcher, about aquarium keeping up in Canada and his website, CanadianAuctions.ca, I do believe, and other relative factors that go on in the Reefs and Rivers Aquarium show. And next week there will be no Entertainment Review Radio show, because I think that Wacko Bob and his Thanksgiving show will wrap things up, and we're going to have a whole bunch of new guests coming here on the Entertainment Review Radio show. And Joseph, I want to know something. You mentioned Canada. Where did you exactly play in Canada? And what kind of other gigs do you play? And then Bob can have the next two questions.
In Canada, it was in Manitoba, in Winnipeg. It was in an arts center. And I'm sorry, it was a couple of years ago. I can't remember the exact name of it, but in downtown Winnipeg, and that's where I performed for the, at that time, the Aboriginal People's Choice Music Awards, which I believe now is the Indigenous Music Awards. I played powwows. I played, you know, regular, where you would find singer-songwriter. I played at colleges. A few theaters, did a couple of tours. The major one that I did was in Michigan. That was a lot of fun. And thanks to Donnell, who orchestrated along with Pat. I can't remember the pronunciation of their last names, but they know who I'm talking about. And I think Pam Luce and Hoax. I'm sorry, Donnell. And that was a lot of fun around the Traverse City area in the college there, and various places and radio spots and, you know, and things like that. You know, basic stuff like everybody. I don't do bars. I'm not a drinker. And I just don't think that my music is suitable. They want to hear, you know, they want to hear Lynyrd Skynyrd and things like that, which I don't play. No offense to Lynyrd Skynyrd, but I just don't play that type of music. So I stay away from places that serve alcohol. So that's one of my things. I just don't see any point in it.
Bob?
All righty. Yeah, I definitely agree with you as far as the bars go. I mean, you know, I call those the places where you can hear all the bar blues you want, that I don't know how people can get into something like that and not have it all sound the same bluesy way.
Yeah, it's just not me anymore. When I was a kid, I played in all. We were I was in a band with two. We were a bar band for two bars, you know, and that was fun. I was a drunk myself, but I'm not a drunk anymore, so it just doesn't feel right, you know.
Oh no, I hear you. Where that goes, you know. I mean, one of my, you know, one of the things I got to say when you write your music, you know, does it come more from what you personally see and what you personally learned?
I couldn't see how it could be any other way, but yeah, the things that I've learned along the way and the things that have moved me. I don't, you know, it. If you listen to my songs, there's nothing that's pertaining to partying all night and every day and all that stuff. It's things that's happened to me in my life, and and a lot of the lines are, if you knew me, if you spent time with me, you'd hear some lines and you'd go, I remember Joe saying something along that line, you know, or I might remember me telling Joe something along that line, you know, and so yeah, from my experiences in my life, yeah, absolutely, it's everything's a story about me in one way or another, something that's happened to me or someone who maybe was close to me or was good, or there were good things or there were not so good things. So yeah, I that's what it is. Yeah, my life. It's the songs that I write are the story of my life in one way, shape, or form. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Yeah, definite good stuff. How can people listen to you if they want to hear you? Are you specifically anywhere where they can listen to your music or even buy your music?
You can buy my music on, you could go to josephstrider.com and you could purchase my music. And there's a number of places that play. A couple years ago, I had a hip operation. And today I walk with a cane and my back's messed up and I really stopped doing gigs. For a minimum of four guitars with me, I prefer six because of the different tunings that I do. It's really hard for me to travel and carry this stuff around. Especially since I rely on a cane, so now I only have one hand to carry things with. And I can't think of them. You know, that somebody called me or left me an email that they heard my music at some radio station in Canada, and you know, and every once in a while I'm just like, I don't ever know who's playing my stuff at any given time. I just really don't even know. But every once in a while, like I said, somebody say, well, I heard you at WXTJ or whatever. And I'm like, where is that? I've never heard of that, you know, and it's interesting because I say things like my life would be complete if I was this world renowned, a musician, and then somebody from Germany or somebody from Italy or something like that, they'll send me a message and they go, well, I thought you were, and I think about it and I'm like, well, if you're hearing me in Italy and you're hearing me in Germany, like, I guess I am, you know, but it's confusing for me. I'm an odd person, and I'm my what is that? HD, I get thrown all over the place all the time. And viewing the world, like I could look outside and I see the wind and I'm like, ooh, song. My girlfriend upset with me because we go somewhere and I'm like looking all around and stuff like that. And she could tell that I'm getting overwhelmed because there's so many things happening around me. And so the best thing for me to do is to kind of isolate myself in this house and shut the blinds to avoid so much stimulation. The stimulation really, really unnerves me. And then my ADHD jumps in, you know, and so and probably a bit too much information about me, but the world makes me nuts. Yeah, it's too much stimulation. So in where I play has to be, I have to feel comfortable, and you know, when I walk in there, it needs to be comfortable, because once I get playing, forget it. There's nothing else that's going on except for what I'm doing, because it requires my absolute concentration in what I'm doing and playing. Since I'm the only one singing and banging at my guitar, it just, you know, I don't have any time except for to concentrate and play that song.
Bob, you got another question?
Yes, I do, and I was basically making a comment and going into this. So if you were to dedicate yourself into music at this point, you probably want to dedicate yourself more as Joseph Strider, the songwriter.
Well, actually, Bob, I really love playing acoustical guitar. And I think my stronger quality as far as being a musician is concerned is the guitar pieces that I can formulate. I would like, under optimum conditions, I would like to be able to have a band where, let's say if there's 5, 6, 7 people, that each one of them would be a lead singer, you know?
Like TSO.
So that I could concentrate on playing the guitar. Playing the guitar, again, is my, I guess you could say it's my drug, and it's my drug of choice. And when I get into a guitar piece and to be able to play it in the fashion that I wrote it and do it as divinely, I can't think of another word, as I can come up with playing it. And that's really important to me. However, again, the songwriting, I don't believe is my strong point. I like singing, don't get me wrong, it's fun. But that takes on obviously a whole new dimension with holding guitar and singing and what is done. And I guess that's why it's a lot easier to have a 5-piece where you have a singer who is, you know, that's their job to just sing, you know, I wouldn't call myself that, but you know, all around where everybody looks at that singer-songwriter genre, everything that has to do with that. But again, I don't believe a strong point as far as strong songwriting is concerned.
Well, Joseph, we've almost run out of time, so I'm going to ask one more question, and then I'm handing the show over to Bob, and I'll be hanging up while Bob takes it out for the show, but I'll ask you one last question. If you were to play with one female artist and have her sing a duet with you, I know that there's several wonderful indigenous women like Buffy St. Marie and that type of thing,
mm-hmm.
who would that mm-hmm. female singer be and the reason why?
Man, you know, Willie, I do not have an answer for that question, because the fact of the matter is, I can't say there's just one. That would be impossible. There are so many, and I've had the honor of listening to a bunch of them, and you know, being at the award show and. Even musicians for that matter, and I wish I could remember names. As a young woman who plays a cello that I got to see at in Canada, she blew me away. I couldn't believe how good she was on that cello and what she could do with it. And you know, something like that, me and the cellist, I wish I could remember her name. And if somebody's listening, you probably know who I'm talking about. I cannot remember her name, though. I'm really bad bad, horrible with names.
Sounds like you're talking about the cellist from Michael Flatley singing later on, went with the Celtic Women.
She's a Aboriginal from Canada. I don't know if that matches who you're talking about.
She's
I really
Irish.
Can't remember. No. She's an Aboriginal. I wish I could remember names. But Willie, I couldn't. You know, I've heard Joanna sing. And Buffy, and I think the better answer for that would be, Willie, if one of those women wanted to sing one of my songs, I would be honored, and that would be awesome, it's like I sent some music to someone, I'm going to say when, and I gave it to him, and he's a flutist, and I said, if you want to do this piece, if it doesn't absolutely move you, then just forget it, and I won't hold it against you. I really won't, because I want you to be moved by it. And it was awesome. So I'm looking forward to getting that. We're going to put a little single out. But, it was his choice, and I wanted to make sure that he knew that it was his choice, because if it didn't move him, I didn't want him to do it. What's the point then? It's music. They call it a product now, but they can call it whatever they want, but a product doesn't come out of my heart and my soul, And so if one of these women wanted to come and sing one of my songs, as a matter of fact, I wrote one, and just trying to think of a woman's voice, and as Seven Arrows, and I was trying to think of a woman's voice, but I asked for a little bit, but it didn't really go anywhere, I think what would be for me though, if the woman was kind of a Janis Joplin, Ann Wilson kind of thing going on, I like that. That soulful, rocky kind of a voice, and that would be somebody who if there was a person that I can't think of right offhand who had that type of voice, who did that kind of thing, what's her name? Darn it, that's 70s. What's her name? She did the song Horses. Yeah, I'm so horrible with names. Patti Smith. Yeah, in between those three. That would be great. Somebody who did that. That would be awesome.
Well, Bob, I think it's time for you to ask Joseph your last question and wrap the show up afterwards. I have to take a step out into the green room, so to speak. So, Bob, it's over to you.
My last question, darn. I've almost used up all my questions here, too. My last question will be, number one, we need to do this. Definitely need to do this again. I definitely have a couple shows you could definitely go on, including my show.
Cool. Yeah,
that'd be great. Talk about this. And that's number one. Number two. How much do you still do promoting as far as promoting your music?
I this is going to be a short answer. I do very little right now. As I expressed before, I had the hip operation, and my body's kind of gone downhill since then. The prison has really consumed a lot of my time. I walk in there and I'm pulled in 100 different directions, and I come home with the present in my mind. I get on my computer, I find information, I try to learn as much as I can together. And honestly, I mean, the reason I spend so much time in there is because it pays. It pays me. I always get a paycheck. Well, sometimes they're very late, but I get a paycheck. And honestly, music is not paying me anything. The money for music is next to nothing.
The music scene has changed that much.
When I was a kid playing in bars, I was making between $200 and $500 a night for me, and they don't even somebody wants me to travel 50 miles, somewhere between 50 and 500 miles with all my stuff, and they offered me a plate of spaghetti and to sell my CDs. It's like, really? You know? It's like, you know, I know you got somebody in the area, you know, and somebody who wants exposure. And somebody tells me about exposure, and I'm like, well, don't people get arrested for that? You know? The music scene and the whole everything, because there's too many people, and half of them want to be rock stars, you know, and they'll do anything to do it. And the funny thing about it is they won't get anywhere, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I don't have a body to play. When I was a kid, no problem. I'd do it. I didn't really care. It was fun. I didn't have anything else to do. I was a kid. I didn't have any responsibilities. Now I'm an adult male, and I have responsibilities, and I can't play for a plate of spaghetti. You know, it's no.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's what a lot of people tend to forget. There's a lot of people out there that do this now, and they're doing it, you know, and you know, they can't do it for peanuts anymore. So some of these people that were doing this for 20 years now have families, and like you said, they can't do it for a plate of spaghetti,
yeah,
or anything like that. I mean, you know, these days now they want to hire a DJ because, like you said, you used to make $500 just on your own,
right?
Like, you know, I mean, you know, that's not what they paid for a band to come out there to play. $500 is easy to pay one person to, and that's a DJ.
Right.
With someone to do karaoke.
Yeah. Well, back in the 80s, when I was really, you know, when I was with the rock bands and stuff like that, oof, we were busy, you know? And people were paying. They knew that my band was going to go over there, and they were going to have a line waiting to get into that bar. And you know what that meant? Lots of liquor sale, you know? And then you're charging people $5-$10 a head. You know, they made a good bit of change, you know, and they knew that was going to happen, and now they're going to make a good bit of change, but when you can play, you know, and have that happening, you know, and people just want to dance, and that's fine, that's what it is. But when one song sounds like the same song for 4 hours, not worth it.
that's what I get into whenever you hear me talk about a lot of these bars and the quote bar blues you get to hear where everything just sounds the same all the time. I just can't take that. I mean, I want something a little more upbeat, something that's going to get people moving.
Yeah, it's a different world than it was back in the 80s.
You're right about that.
When I was really into it, and you know, and it was a lot of fun, and I'm not saying it isn't fun now, but it's just harder work now for me as a solo artist. It's just, you know, I don't want to depend on somebody else, but I have to, and then that complicates matters, you know. That's the whole. I don't want to have someone have to really go out of their way to help me, so it gets on my conscience, and so in that I just had to just draw back, you know.
Yeah.
Draw back a lot. Yeah.
Oh, I hear you where that goes. I definitely hear you where that goes. I've seen what the nightclub scene was like for music. I've seen it fall apart. I've seen it try to restructure itself, then fall apart again. So I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Here in Florida, so here in Florida, it gets crazy.
Yeah. I need theaters. You know, that's what I need. I need theaters. I don't mind powwows, but you know, it just doesn't pay unless, you know, you're the big name. You know, which I'm not. So it's rough, you know, it's rough. But I'll probably, you know, on the day that I die, I'll probably be trying to work out some song, though, you know.
Yeah, there you go. All right, with that being said, I'll definitely end here with one of your songs here. You know, and I'll end actually with what we started with here. You know, and for that one, we'll actually end here, and I'm trying to get it up here now, was the song that we opened the show with here today. And for those listening, 20 minutes from now, we will have the Reefs and Rivers Aquarium Show, which also features the same host who is actually taking some time out here. But we'll end here with Once Upon a Time here by the one and only Joseph Strider. Thank you for coming on the show. Hang on the line here. I'm going to talk to you on the other end.
Thank you for having me, both of you, Bob.
Absolutely.
And Willie, thank you very much.
Life is everywhere. Didn't even have to try to.